proceed.
I can't hear you.
Can you hear me? Can the members hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, Chair.
Yes, we can hear you, Chair.
I want to know then what the problem.
Yes, we can hear you, Chair. We can hear you.
All right, thank you, Deputy Minister. Honorable members, I think we should start. As I said, I can see that we have the numbers. I hope Achira would be able to get back and be able to hear discussions of the meeting. Let me take the opportunity once again to greet honorable members, Deputy Minister, that's Deputy Minister Thembi Sweya. That's the one I've seen now, who have logged in. But also to acknowledge delegations from the department, in particular GCIS, as well as the entities that would be presenting to the committee this morning. All of you are acknowledged in your different capacities. Greetings to fellow South Africans who are following our discussion from different platforms. Without the rest of time, I would just dispense with formalities. Just again, remind us before we even take apologies that for those who are in the platform, please keep in mind that this is the meeting of the committee convened on the basis of the National Assembly rules, which includes rules on virtual meetings. Now, in that score, you are reminded that if you are not speaking at a time, please ensure that your mic is muted and that your video camera is also switched off. Of course, when you are to speak, you are allowed to put your mic on unmute as well as your video camera on. But given the challenges we know in relation to network challenges and the weather out there, we'd also get an indication from yourself where you are experiencing problems, that you would make that request to keep your video off, but make sure that we can still hear your contribution in the meeting. This includes those that are coming as delegations from different entities and members of the public, that as you join the meeting, please ensure that you join with your mic muted so that the background sound does not interfere with the proceedings of the meeting. In a situation where we need to speak, whether it is a point of order, you should just remember that you would have to raise your hand either in the system.
Oh, I'm having problems. I can't hear anything and I can't get out.
You are recognized by the chair to speak, and that the chair will then give you an opportunity to speak. That helps us with the smooth running of the meeting. So I just thought that we should remind each other about that, because it does take our time to continuously remind people to mute. So we'll then apply the rules. If we call you twice, we'll then ask the ICT to assist us to get you out of the meeting. So in that score, the rules issue has been clarified. Honorable members, as I said, I know that Hajira may be experiencing problems of not hearing us, but you can hear her. I will just deal with this part. In case there's any matter left on apologies, we'll still give an opportunity. But on record, we have an apology from the minister Mr. Jackson Mthembu, who's attending to a cabinet committee meeting. He has sent his apology for this meeting. However, as I acknowledged earlier on, that the Deputy Minister Thembu Sweya is with us from the side of the political leadership of the department. We also have an apology from the Minister of DCDT, who has sent a report to NCASA that she's in a political work in the Eastern Cape. We also have an apology from the Deputy Minister, Pinky Kekana, who is leading a meeting on the district development model as the champion deployed in the Free State. So those are apologies from departments that come before us. But as you said, the meeting allows us to proceed with the numbers we have, but we need to note the following apologies from members, and again, if I'm leaving any member, that will be added. We have an apology from Honorable Mthembu, who is unable to join today's meeting. We also have an apology from Honorable Majosi, who's also unable to join this meeting. These are the apologies I would have received, the honorable members, which were sent by administration to my side. As I say, if I have left any, that would be updated before we close the meeting, so that on record, at least it's known that the committee acknowledged those. Hajira, are you back now? It would appear that we don't have Hajira.
Good morning, sir. It's Thembu Nkosi. She's experiencing problems, so I'll be taking over for now, Chair.
No, thank you, Mr. Mom. Then in that score, we can be able to proceed. But before, as I said, if there are those that I may have left, you can indicate Mr. Ngoma or any member in case I would have left an apology that would have been sent to. May I just check that now that you are taking over from her as she experiences connection?
Hi, Chair. I will indicate, Chair, if there's any. I'll just verify on the sidelines with her. But I will definitely indicate if there's any other ones more than those that you have already mentioned. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Thank you, Thembu Nkosi. Can we then proceed, Honourable Members? I just wanted to just indicate on how we proceed, as well as the changes we made on the program. You would be aware that we needed to take a presentation from GCIS, as well as take a presentation from CENTEC and CASA in relation to
you unmuted, Chair.
Sorry, Chair, yes, we can't hear him. Okay, thanks.
So we would have then looked at the presentations to be made and agreed that the meeting that we planned for next week with MDDA on the same matter, it will just not make sense to have the meeting at that point. SGCIS, CENTEC and ICASA will talk to the same matter today, that the committee must get a holistic view by also bringing in MDDA, hence the update on the slides that you have received, so that post the meeting, the committee is able to at least indicate to society that there are solutions that have been taken in assisting that level of the center, which therefore means that the next meeting, which was also meant to include MDDA will now focus on the Auditor General's report on the department and its entities, which also means that the committee would also have undivided attention to focus on matters that the Auditor General would raise, and that would have concluded on these matters. Of course, on the item of MDDA, that was to look at how they were dealt with the audit findings, that's a matter I would be able to deal with when they appear before us and the department on the annual performance, on the annual reports that they would present before us. So I just thought it's important that we clarify that point now, because it is just purely based on how we looked at the content we are engaging on, and that we need to make sure we have a holistic view in that scope. So having clarified it, we would have the presentation, of course, from the department and followed by the entities as outlined in the notice. As it is usually the case, the honorable members would give the political leadership opportunity to do a brief overview in introducing the department, which is now GCIS, and also how that presentation is going to be done. I take it that in that we'll also introduce the minister, the delegation that is here from your side, and take it from there. When we get to the presentations, I will indeed look at the time, because I also know that there is a house sitting and honorable members are also engaged in some last push-up for the work that's happening in the camps tomorrow, the by-elections. So we'll also manage our time so that members still have to prepare and get to the house, especially those that are attending the house physically. So we'll keep the time. The department and MDDA would then do the 35 minutes, so they'll share that amongst themselves, whether they do 2015, that would help looking at the slides we have. Would also give the other entities 15, so that if they go beyond, at least the grace is not too much. This is done with an understanding that members have received these presentations. They've had an opportunity to engage with the presentations as they were going through them. And purely the presentations are about emphasizing certain points or highlighting certain points, which then can make members to review probably their notes. Otherwise, members would have read the documents before them, hence we try and keep the time. So we'll take all the presentations and only engage after that, as the common trend is community and media support that we need to look at. Thank you, honorable members. Now I would hand over to the Deputy Minister for brief overview. Deputy Minister Square.
Thank you, Chairperson. I hope I'm audible. Good morning to members of the committee, good morning to colleagues in GCIS, ICASA, and the MDDA. Chair and honorable members, we truly regard today's engagement as very important. These engagements are meant to assess and to give us an opportunity to come and account to you and update the portfolio committee. What we have been seeking to achieve as the ministry together with GCIS and MDDA is that we want to see a meaningful effect of Section 16 and Section 32 of the Bill of Rights of our Constitution, and these two entities are able to assist us. Chair, the MGDA Act is a developmental piece of legislation which has been sponsored by the GCIS many years ago to ensure that we continue to capacitate and empower community media sector. This was produced through the platform of Parliament, which was meant to also support and promote media development and diversity. Members of the committee, this law, read with the repealing repealed act of the IBA Act, currently now it is called ICASA, was meant to promote access to information and to also to create an enabling environment to deepen democracy, but also to ensure that we enjoy media freedom by all. We continue to want to promote the right to communicate by all South Africans and all the progressive and capable principles in the Bill of Rights. Sustainability of our democracy is directly linked to media diversity, which is mainly in languages spoken by all citizens. Digital economy presents a challenge that calls on us not to forget that we need to continue to ensure that MGDA and GCIS do their mandate. We must continue to support community, small and commercial media in all districts in the country, but also to ensure that all districts and all South Africans, you find community media sector, either it's in print and electronic, so that we are able to communicate with our people. Chairperson, we are therefore indebted within our own existing mandate to ensure that we create opportunities and new opportunities to ensure that our people continue to enjoy the good work which we are doing as MGDA and GCIS. As the presidency chair, from last year, August, we have been engaging with various organs of the state to ensure that we kept them into the entire ecosystem of supporting community media and also commercial media. There is progress, and the presentations which we are going to bring to you today are going to reflect that progress, which we have been doing to ensure that we communicate with our people. The discussions today, Chair, will also include, and we are inviting you to debate with us so that we can continue to sharpen our work and what we do. It will also include the transformation agenda as an entirely, and where we started and how far are we today. And also we are inviting you, Chair, and the committee, that as we bring the report, let us also have a conversation about how do we improve moving forward to ensure that we continue to diversify commercial print and electronic community media to ensure that our people also experience it entirely wherever they are and so on. I'm going to request Chair with me. I've got the DG of GCIS. She's going to make a presentation. We also have got the CEO of MGDA. She's also going to make a presentation. And after that, like you have indicated, the CASA will make the presentation, and then we'll take the discussion forward. Thank you. I'm going to, DG Pumla, please let's take the committee through and enter into the discussions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister, and good morning to the honorable members. I'm with the three DDGs that are accompanying us to come and make this presentation, which will be led by Mr. Michael Curran. I've got Tyrone Seal and also Kitmet Simakane. Chairperson, without wasting any time, I think we are going to take guidance from you. We will try and do the presentation in 15 minutes so that the MGDA can take the 20. So without wasting any time, I'll request Michael to take us through. Thank you.
Thank you, DG, and Honourable Chair, Honourable Maneli MP, and Honourable Members. I hope I'm audible, firstly, and I hope I'm visible on the screen, Chairperson. First and foremost, good morning, Honourable Members, and good morning, Honourable Deputy Minister Sawaya, and I am going to really try and be quick on the 15 minutes, Honourable Chair, because you did indicate to us that that is your preferred mode. So, we're going to share with the committee, Honourable Chair, just four broad areas of our support partnership with the community media sector in the 2019-2020 year. We want to share a little bit about why this sector. We want to speak a little bit about informing the nation regarding it as an operation we do together, which speaks about a relationship. Then I'm going to delve a little bit into some of the specifics, and lastly, we'll look at some of the media opportunities that have come in the way forward. Honourable Chair, we do have a very clear mandate for accurate and accessible information to be part of the mandate of GCIS from the Constitution. We speak about a citizenry that's informed and a citizenry that knows about government programs. We translate that into a vision and a mission where we are seeking, and by the way, our pulse is racing today from the city of Tswane, Honourable Chair, where we are in the middle of a massive thunderstorm, so I hope it causes no hiccups. But we see ourselves as a pulse, and that pulse is about proactively communicating with the public. And we know that for the sixth administration, that's done through a very, very tight set of seven priorities and within a medium-term strategic framework that is very telling to the goals that we want to achieve as we pursue the National Development Plan. Obviously, our strategic goals at GCIS, we do strive for compliance, we strive to put in place excellent communication products, and we strive to have a system-wide relationship. Now, why is that important, Honourable Chair? Members, our view is that that mandate of a constitutional accountability makes the community media one of the most important anchor partnerships for us in realising a constitutional democracy and the right to information. Where the community media reaches South Africans in areas where historical deprivation to access to information was prominent, but I'll touch on that later as well. But very importantly, they ensure a diversity of voice and opinion in the media so that they can get stories from all sorts of South Africans in terms of opinions, in terms of linguistic diversity, cultural diversity. Honourable members, we know that community media is no different to other media in many ways. They operate the same as big commercial media, but they are very unique and special in that they are very niche to the languages that they use, as the Deputy Minister said, and they happen often in places where they are very intimately associated with those communities. In other words, where communities know them and where there are spaces that matter most to those people. So yes, I'll touch on the segmentation model in a minute, but a very critical element of community media, and while we regard them as an absolute anchor, is that they are in the lives of our people. They are where South Africans are operating at that metropolitan or local space. Community media, ladies and gentlemen, or honourable members, sorry, we see them as influencers of a media agenda at the local level. And it's because of this reason that we have put them top of mind in the way we develop our support, and in fact, top of mind in the way we communicate with all of South Africa. Obviously, honourable members, I'm sure members have seen the segmentation model before. We use it to guide the way we communicate with the public. We use it to determine the right platform. Community media, as honourable members can imagine, covers all these areas. But in the cosmopolitan capital audiences, you will have a unique niche media that is local. But I think for the developmental trajectory and the legislative space that the DM spoke about, our focus is on the rooted realist community. Almost 28 million South Africans who live in rural and peri-urban and township areas who were historically deprived of access to information. And therefore, we focus a lot of energy on being able to buy community media in that space. So yes, we have community media covers all of these certain areas, but a strong opportunity in reaching those South Africans in segment number one. Now, why did we say it's a togetherness thing? First of all, honourable members, honourable chair, we regard the sacrosanct the editorial independence of the community media. We respect that. We respect their independence to cover stories as and how they like it or see it in their locality. Secondly, we know that the community media do not have necessarily the information gathering infrastructure and the capacity of large-scale media houses. So that, honourable members, we keep it foremost in mind as we structure our support offering to the community media sector. Thirdly, we know that revenue is important. We will touch on that, honourable members, to give account of that. But advertising revenue in localities is weak. And part of our business model is to ensure that we support through advertising. And very fourthly and finally, we believe that we're working here not with a story of today. We at GSAS have come a very long way with the sector, have had a long-standing relationship with the sector. And honourable chair and members, we believe that it's because of this that we believe that our support offering is couched in our understanding of a relationship of doing this job together. And that changes our whole posture. So over the last 1920 year, honourable members, you all remember, it was a year to remember, especially I'm sure for honourable members in this house, that it was the year of the Democratic General Election. Our relationship that we're talking about here spanned the electoral period, and obviously during this period the Independent Electoral Commission made use of community media, the Department of Home Affairs were on the various community media platforms speaking about how to get access to the ID documents, other such things, and obviously the JCPS machinery used the sector a lot to explain to South Africans how safe that things should be on election day. Obviously through this period, then we had the inauguration of our president, we had the introduction through the mid-year of last year of a State of the Nation of 7 medium-term priorities, which are a very rich content suite, which, honourable members, at the end of this term, at the end of 2019, became expressed in the launch of a much tighter implementation model for the delivery of a rapid attack on the goals of the National Development Plan, namely the District Development Model. And that's given very fresh impetus to our relationship with the sector. So in brief, there are a few broad categories. We have a very strong developmental relationship with the sector. And in partnership with the MDDA, both the GSAS radio unit as well as our provincial and district offices interact on a regular basis with the community media sector to assist with the development of programming, to assist with some of the development of access issues. The MDDA, as you'll hear from the CEO later today, has been busy with a lot of revitalization work. So that's what we've been doing. So it's not just a one-way street. We open those doors and our radio unit goes on visits, honourable chair, to the sector. Secondly, we have intervened on some very good practical training. I'll touch on that in a minute. So for example, with the South African Revenue Service, a lot of the GSAS provincial and district offices have run sessions with the community media to assist with this ever-elusive tax compliance matter that has kept some of the platforms unable to benefit from buying. Obviously, what played a very strong role in ensuring that community media was actively involved. As you saw on the previous slide, the picture of the president there in a community media space, we are actively making sure that community media feature in all the strategic communication forums that we have in the system of government communication. Stakeholder engagement, we do a lot of work with community media when ministers of the national executive and DMs visit communities, when there are IDP consultations, and when you have things that mayor and a premier and MEC meets the people. Advocacy. There are still places in government, honourable chair, where the community media sector is still treated with a bit of disdain or kept at arm's length because of the issue of, we want to reach 10 million people, not 10,000 people. So we play a very strong role in government advocating for the importance of this sector based on some of those slides I shared with honourable members of us. Second to last, we have a very strong content provision, and I'll touch on that in a short while. Free content to content providers on a daily basis to the community media sector. And last but not least, and I will speak to that later, campaign implementation. Community media, honourable chair, are top of mind in every single campaign we roll out as a CSAS. So a few other areas of support, every government department, has the community media database, which they will always send out, and I'll indicate GCIS and specific role there a bit later. Secondly, they are a primary interface when members of the executive do either visa or they visit local areas. Thirdly, community media are fully accredited to access national and provincial and municipal executive legislative structures so they can cover those news stories directly. Fourthly, we have a very strong set of call-in programs, interviews with government leadership, and sometimes we've arranged up to 105 stations can be linked. Plus, we have the twice a day free news bulletin that we provide. We have now moved into the era where spokespersons of ministers and DMs are doing audio clips. I'm sure some of you may have heard some of the outstanding ones that Minister Pandor's team has been doing. We send those to the community media as well as a constant issue of statements. All of the products of our photographic and video units are made available to the sector, and very critically, the South African News Service generates massive content on a daily basis, at least over 30 to 35 pieces a week, which are available to those. We've shown honourable members here that by and large, government has a very valuable static resource of 96% of us having websites and a large presence on social media, particularly Facebook and Twitter. Honourable members, these are readily available to the community media for use for content gathering and harvesting all the time. Honourable members, through our provincial offices, I mentioned we have the capacity building role, and 57 capacity interventions were held last year alone, over the 2019-20 year. As I indicated, for example, it's not only about those kinds of things like tax compliance. If you see that wonderful picture on the right-hand side there, everybody in this portfolio, Honourable Chair, knows that in November last year, we were a nation under siege with gender-based violence and femicide. It was the thing that all of us were fighting against. In Limpopo, the team of government communicators, led by the GCIS media engagement team and the Department of Women, went to Limpopo. They sat with all the community media, particularly female journalists in that sector, and looked at how we can do gender-based sensitive reporting in the work that we do. I'm not going to tarry long because I hope honourable members have had a chance to look at the pictures here. This just shows you the rich suite of content that we have on offer. And these are some of the pictures of GCIS and our partners on some of the radio talk shows. Out of the 1,700 plus projects we did last year, 259 were done via community media platforms, which is a very, very significant achievement. Obviously, at a system level, we do intervene, as I said, and provincial government communication, weekly planning consistently involves community media. Premiers and the various structures of MECs will always use community media when they reach out, when they have live sessions. The weekly calendar, I can assure honourable members, through the communication teams we have in provinces, is fully inclusive of community media, but more can be done in this regard. From our media house, the Ronnie Mumepa room at City Motetso House, we had, for example, in the year concerned, 96 media briefings, and most of those, as you know, are linked to Cape Town and are addressed by ministers and deputy ministers. They were quite a big achievement. More and more community media are attending physically these briefings. So you can see Capital Live, PNN News, Counting TV on a set up at the Cape Town. Your Cape TV goes there, as well as Zibonele and Bush, as well as in the Ronnie Mumepa Centre. We have 213 community media on our database. And not only are they starting to attend these briefings physically, but they are also linked to these events live through different either satellite feeds or through our platforms such as our Facebook site. A very important, I won't stop on the one area, but we did a lot of a beautiful event here, Honourable MPs, where we took campus youth radios and made a partnership with them, because remember, in this sector of media, the adaptation to digital platforms is very critical, ensuring the survival and the reach of this sector. So one of the great areas of partnership and support is around the post-chapter briefings. We are very proud, Honourable Chair, that the community media sector, even if you're sitting in Bochum or far from the centre of legislative or executive power, you can have access to the community media. Because the Director General, seeing here, Ms. Williams, has we develop a detailed post-chapter schedule of media interviews with the MPG for the post-camp with community media, while Minister Mchembe will feed some of the larger community sector interviews. Obviously, coming to an end, honourable members, money is very, very important in terms of the sustainability, and I'll unpack this. Of the 36 national departments, only 19 entities made use of the GSAF media buying service in the 2019-20 year. You can see, I'll stick to the numbers in a minute, but honourable members, 17 departments, most provinces and municipalities opted to do this with direct access to the media owners or through media agencies, which is a challenge, and I will tell you why in a moment. Obviously, honourable members, the 19.148 million spent on the community radio sector last year alone, 937 of those was spent through the GSAF provincial offices. So nearly a million rand on very, very localised radio talk shows. Honourable members, for reasons of time, I'm not going to take the members through some of these top hitters. I thought we'd show honourable members from the print community, from the TV community, and from the radio community some of the major campaigns that we've been driving in the 1920 year. You can see some of the major migration of key departments like social development. We have an excellent relationship with Justice for the Let's Talk Justice program. So honourable members, I think what I do want to reiterate again is that there's a range of projects. Firstly, there's paid for programs which go through the year. Even sometimes when they are not paid for, they are still live streamed. So in a minute I'll show you a very superb picture to illustrate this when the Social Development Department made a very intensive use of community media to make sure they project anti-fraud campaigns. Secondly, we have phone-in programs like the Let's Talk Justice one, and so those two suites run by the GSAS radio unit amounted to 55 projects last in that year. Of those 55, 26 we call them of a national character, so that would be when Minister Zulu, for example, was in the studio talking to 51 or sometimes up to 100 stations, depending on their compliance. And the 29, those are the ones where you want to go and reach the radio stations in and around Kwakwa so that you can speak to a land claim process in that area. So of the 55, 26 were those big, broad education awareness ones, 29 the very niche one. And then, honourable members, you can see some of the nice pictorials. You remember the President visited RX radio station here? I think it's at the Red Cross Children's Hospital or nearby prior to his June solo. There's Deputy Minister Zawaya in action with Ugo UFM, where the MPDA and the DM were doing a visit to the station, working with the station to strengthen some of the capacity. And this one here, Minister Mchembe, prior to our budget speech last year, and Minister Zulu, this is a kickstart program where she would then come in as the anchor, initiating speaker, and then other members of her team would come in the following series. There you can see the globe and the way the address for UIF compensation fund and employment and labour look. I want to touch on this slide as I'm near the end, honourable members, is that yes, you can see the importance of community media. Government information is very important to community media. But if you look at those I've circled in red, it shows you why we also want to be part of it. Because other local information is very important to those audiences who read the Globe or listen to a certain radio station. So there you see the local spaza was advertising their JoJo tank and things. And we believe that GSAF has a fundamental importance of this sector. So we see ourselves as only one among a suite of players. And then drawing to the end, honourable members, the numbers. If we look at this assessment on a vertical scale, it means that of the total radio spend in 1920 of 50 million rand, 19 million was spent on community radio, which is a 58% achievement, 12% on community television, so it means that only 4 million out of a total of 55 million, and on the print sector, 4 million out of a total of 61 million. Which is a 7% vertical achievement. When you add these numbers together and you look at the grand total, we achieved 19% spent, honourable chair, which as every member of this committee knows is not the at least 30% that we're aiming for, but it is significantly improved from between 7 and 10% of last year, of the 18-19 year. So very good, we achieved a 19% spend against the spend of the previous year. And then in conclusion, we think that obviously the COVID era has hit all media, including the community media, very significantly, with unemployment rising in the sector. However, the health crisis has given us some lessons learned, and as our 2021 figures are going to show, there's been a major uptake because of the ad enrichment and the locality that happened through this media. So obviously, remember, there were hotspots, Honourable Chair, and those hotspots had to be targeted directly, and it doesn't help you to use the Sunday Times for that. So there was a very strong ad enrichment in bias of the community media sector in the first half of this year. Thirdly, the introduction at the end of this year of the district champions that would be the multi-sectoral model. We believe that there's no place like national. All of this work is going to be happening at the district level. And therefore, it's very, very beneficial to community media to have an entrenched footprint at that local level where this district one plan will be unfolded. And then finally, and not least of all, we think that the economic reconstruction and recovery plan, those big projects of that plan, those job employment opportunities will also be happening in those communities. And therefore, community media moving forward, we believe, have a huge opportunity to play a role there. Honourable Chair, I'm very sorry I exceeded my time, but that is the end of my presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. That's all from the ADS.
Can you hear your teaching? I can hear you.
Chair, I was saying thank you very much. That's all from the GCIS.
All right. Thank you. DG will then allow MTA to proceed.
Mitigate this moving target called
the debt with Sentech on signal distribution. Here we highlight the debt over a three-year period and where the MDDA has been able to contribute. In 2018, we would recall, honorable members, honorable deputy minister, that at that point, I think about 15 registrations had been switched off, and the MDDA then was requested by the then former Minister of Communications to make contribution and make an arrangement to sort out the debt. And at that point, we were able to pay 11.8 million. In 2019, unfortunately, we could not able to note that we don't necessarily have a line item in our budget for funding the signal distribution, and we are working on plans on how we can mitigate this in future. As we speak today, the debt is sitting at 17 million. That is despite the approval of the 18 million by the board earlier this year, and on this slide we then break it down on how on what areas exactly this funded. The 18 million that was approved in March at the end of the financial year is funding 22 approved projects, which we gave them normal grants at the end of the financial year, and those 22 were allocated 6.6 million to settle their debt, historical debt, and also to pay for their 12-month transmission fees with Sentech. On the other hand, we then allocated about 2 million for three projects that were previously funded. They've been off air some from 2018, and yet we had invested in them in terms of broadcast equipment. So this is one of the strategies that is now agreed with the board and the Sentech, that when we fund a setup, we will then connect them, because what kills them is the setup cost, which then gets amortized over the length of the broadcast license. And the broadcasters, we found the community broadcasters that they just never recover from this. Also, in part of that 18 million was a call that we made to qualifying projects, and those were approved for 9.2 million to 17 qualifying projects, and we paid this 9.2 and the 2 million over to Sentech around May, and the 6.6 million is obviously tied up with the granting aid agreement. So it will be discussed as and when we pay those projects. In terms of our strategies and plans to mitigate, I've already spoken to the fact that we've now agreed and we have started in the 2019-20 funding setup costs in terms of the signal distribution with Sentech. We are and we have written to Sentech asking for a plan to buy out the community broadcasters' assets, which is the transmitters and so forth, over a short period. And I've said to Mr. Boyd, my colleague, that honorable members, is going to be a tall order, because we need to find that money, but we're committed to assisting government and the sector trying to resolve this Sentech debt. Self-provisioning is one of the issues or one of the strategies that we think we may have to implement, but we are pinning our hopes on the sustainability model, because naturally we're going to need the skills. If we are to say that we are buying you a transmitter, of which some of our projects are beginning to say, can we then move away from Sentech and buy transmitters? We're looking into this very diligently. We've got projects like Bonelli in Cape Town that have off the grid of Sentech, and they've always been self-providing. So we've got a couple of projects that are self-providing, and we have not had a lot of challenges from that side. But naturally, I think we're going to have to once we are able to buy out the capital assets or self-provide for some of our projects, we certainly are going to be in discussions and negotiations for maintenance and support expertise with Sentech, whilst we think that we must develop capacity also in technical skills in our communities where these community media are. In terms of digitizing the sector, honorable deputy minister, honorable members, here today we are bringing plans. There is no solid thing that we've done in as far as digitizing the sector is concerned, and the reason for that is because our digital migration strategy is in the making. We've got a draft. It will be finalized before the end of the year. But if the preliminary findings are telling us that community radio stations at large
are at different levels of adaptation and reportedly pacing themselves based on their organizational capacity. So we are again going to invest in annual digital training. But what is also important in terms of the digital presence in what we did in terms of the audit, and also I think in terms of the strategy and the draft findings or preliminary findings that we have, is that nearly all stations have some form of social media platforms such as Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, SoundCloud, website, but some of these are down due to lack of funds. I must hasten, Honorable Chairperson, to say that as part of the print sector funding for commercial print, we also support digital print, and we've got about more than 10, I think about 12, that are digital print projects that we have funded in the past, of the about 100 that we have funded in the past. Digital radio broadcast studios, we are installing them. I found the MDA installing them at the time, so we are digital ready in terms of the equipment that we install now. We have presented to the board, I think a week ago, a draft concept on broadcast application, which is an app, but the board has given us input and it needs to be refined. In terms of, if you ask, how are we going to do most of them, we have spoken and we are in, and these companies are in principle agreement with us, the mobile companies, Vodacom, MTN, have agreed to partner with us to zero rate some of the websites, URLs and apps for our beneficiaries. We also have got an agreement with the independent media, which has got a division called Vault Africa, which is part of digitization, and they've agreed to assist the MDDA digitize the sector. The other, I think, thing that's worth mentioning is the agreement in principle with the multi-choice for them to, they've agreed to include community radio stations on their DSTV bouquet. And as I'm saying, this is work in progress. We will finalize what that means for the sector, what are the benefits to the sector, versus the benefits to them, who pays who. But at the moment, we were told this is a free arrangement, but we will fine-tune this arrangement with the multi-choice. In terms of policy developments that we're watching out for, it's the issuing or publishing of the draft white paper on audio and audiovisual. The MDCA, led by the GCTC, will hold a workshop now in November with the sector, so that we can solicit input after they've understood what this white paper means for the sector. And the other issue that we're watching is the DAB Plus trials, which are being conducted between Saliba and the NAB. We're watching that closely. Also, the policy directive on digital sound broadcasting that was announced on the 10th of July by the minister in the CCCTC. We are watching that those developments very closely. And it is important that I mentioned this because this is also part of the findings on the digital strategy that we have commissioned. It says that the state of the ICT sector report in South Africa, which was commissioned by the ICASA in 2018, states that 25% of the listeners had access to digital radio programming. By saying that, it is to say that the MDDA and the sector will not be left behind, and it is planning to catch up in terms of the digital convergence that is happening in the country and in the world over. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairman. Thank you very much, Honorable Members.
Thank you. Thank you, CEO. I hope I am audible still, Honorable Members. May I just indicate, please unshare the presentation. May I just indicate, just for record, that Honorable Madisha apologizes, is still struggling to connect to the meeting. I will now give a few minutes to the acting DG to introduce the entities that report to the CGT, so that they then get to present immediately. I'm sure they would have picked up from the first presentations. The time was managed, but at least the matters have been aligned to manage. I think, EG.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Chair, Honorable Members,
CEOs and board members and councillors of entities that are present here. And well, I wish this I do not praise the Deputy Minister of the Presidency, Mr. Kendisiweya. Chair, we have here Centec and ICASA. These two entities are responsible in the main. Centec is responsible for signal distribution, as we know. They have appeared before this committee, and for purposes of today, they are coming here to actually table and show how they are dealing with the community media insofar as signal distribution costs, and how they have given even a break in terms of payment, and how that has impacted them during this COVID. And then you also have ICASA on the other side of the spectrum, who has also discussed to ensuring that the community media sector, both on radio and television, is registered for issues of ensuring that they are licensed and they are able to adhere to issues of corporate governance, and they are aligned to issues of community media in the main. So, Chair, these two entities in the main are here to support and ensure that the community media thrives and is the voice that is available in South Africa. I will hand over, Chair, with your permission, to the team of Centec to lead their presentation, and they will not take much of your time. Thank you, Chair, and Honourable Member Niyabonga.
Thank you very much. Now, and over to Centec.
Thank you very much, Chair Maneli, Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee, Deputy Minister and the Director General who are present, as well as my colleagues from ICASA, GCPIS, MDDA. It is a pleasure with our execs, the CEO, the CFO, as well as the COO, together with some board members who are here. We are very delighted, Chair, to have been invited to present. We believe that this engagement is very important and crucial. It is our view that community media plays a very crucial role in our communities in terms of access to information, in terms of access to knowledge, education, and the well-being of our communities who are in other areas that are far flung in our country. And we believe that we play a crucial role, and we're committed to continue to play that crucial role in our country in signal distribution to this community. However, there are challenges that we've experienced in the past in terms of the debt that we have in terms of this service. And we are going to be presenting today some of the challenges that we have faced and some of the solutions that we have discussed with our sister entities on how some of these things can be resolved. And I'll hand over to our CEO to take us through the presentation that we would like to table to the honorable members. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members of the Committee, colleagues. It is indeed a very interesting time that we live in, where communication remains very important in order to inform our people, wherever they are and whoever they are. And Honourable Chair, it's important also for us to state it upfront that the sector that we're talking to here today, as my board chair has indicated, is a very important sector in terms of promoting democracy and access to information. And it's been a long road since the early 90s when this sector was launched, and we have participated for that long in enabling this sector. And then our role as Centec, being a state-owned company. You, to make sure that all these facilities that I'm showing here are available for access to all the citizens of this country using our technology that we have built over the years, the vast coverage of our transmitter network nationally, the move towards digitalization, which needs us to make sure that there are national data centers which are accessible and national contact centers. We therefore present to the committee an entity that has been supporting this sector for many years. We just talked to how we are supporting this sector, Shepherds, members of the Polio community, and how we have navigated through the difficulties over the years of the community not being able to cover its cost for transmission. And also we'll talk to what we have done to make sure that there is differentiated tariffs that we give to the community media. I will not take you through the background, Jefferson. Suffice it to say that, you know, broadcasting without community media is not complete. And also we need to point out that a community broadcaster's sustainability is critical for the democracy and democratization of media. And therefore we play that role as a state-owned entity to support them. And I think it's got to be said, Jefferson, that we operate an infrastructure that is very extensive. It's a national infrastructure and it needs to be maintained at all times so that you avoid any blackouts that may happen. And we want to also ensure that the broadcasters are able to at all times remain on air. I will not touch on the legislative framework, but suffice to say that we have sent over the years indicated that we provide differentiated tariffs, and then those tariffs are being offered to the media or to the community media so that they can be able to afford to play their role as community media. If I may move on to the next phase, then Jefferson, after having said and shared that background, we have a number of community media in the country on our database, it's about 146, and we've got them broken down by province, and then KZN being the biggest area which has number of about 80 community broadcasters, followed by Southern and Eastern Cape and Western Cape and Mpumalanga and the state, and then the other smaller. And I suppose that this is where MDDA has been trying to assist and GCIS and the presidency to say there should be a very expanded space or rather expanded coverage for community media. But it is important, Honorable Bishop and members, that the expansion is managed so that we don't find ourselves as the state and as the sector not being able to manage the affordability of the signal distribution for these community media broadcasters. If you look at the situation of the debt that is currently in our books, acknowledging the support from the MDDA, which we appreciate because they are helping us to be able to maintain this sector as they are a very important sector. So we mentioned that we've got about 70 million, that is the total debt of our community broadcasters. Out of what we did in the during the period of lockdown level 5 to level 3, 2, we did ensure that there is continuity of broadcasting services, Chairperson. And that we offered the 2 months payment holiday or deferred payment to all or most of our customers, both communities and public broadcasting and commercial, those who requested it, we offered it to them. In particular, the community media, which is a very sensitive media, we offer the payment holiday. But we must emphasize, Chairperson, that it's a struggle over the years where we remain owned and we remain operating outside of the grace periods that we offer to the community broadcasters or to customers. But we have extended the grace period with the support of our board because NDDA has made some commitments to do their bit. Not that they have committed to cover all the debt, but they have given us the assurance that there is work being done there. The indication of that is the $11 million that they paid previously to try and cover part of the debt. I will not go to the details of the we had potentially, I think, in the country where government has decided to offer the transmission cost subsidy for community broadcasters, and this transmission cost over the years was covered by the DOC, but then around 2015-2016, the cost that was offered by the department dried up. And when that happened, most of the community broadcasters really fell during those hard times, and then they were unable to, we assume they were unable to, because they didn't really start paying yet because the subsidy was cut off. And that has really caused the problem to increase over the years. But I think there is an effort from government to work on the challenge that is being faced. I will then indicate that currently what we do, Honorable Chair, as in terms of the debt that we, or rather the tariff that we offer to our broadcasters, in particular the community media, breaking down on that tariff is really that of course the support and maintenance for some spares and third party boards and studio to transmit a living and so on. So because we buy transmitters and also because of the service that we offer, we really go for transmitters which are very durable and low maintenance, but obviously the cost gets recovered over the amortization period, and that becomes a burden to the community broadcasters. So what we have proposed and being considered by the MDDA board is the once-off funded support for the broadcasters. Sorry about that. The once-off cost, and then we'll then structure the tariff so that it covers support and maintenance and third-party costs, which is direct linking from student to transmitter side. This will alleviate the high cost of monthly payment by the broadcaster. So, Chairperson, we know that in most countries, CRBs or community broadcasters are funded by government. Members of the public, they are funded from advertising and content sharing revenues. In some cases, I guess it's only TV where there's collection of TV licenses. But it's a sector that is strongly dependent on the volunteers, and therefore it is important that this sector is funded appropriately. But again, Chairperson, honorable members, it's important that broadcasters are encouraged to work towards self-sufficiency. I don't believe that the state is going to afford to continue supporting all the broadcasters, especially if we don't move towards the model of district and approach where you have fewer community broadcasters in a district and those are actually covering the needs of that community. But if we continue to license many more of these broadcasters, even in communities where you already have currently broadcasting community media. We're going to have problems. If I may, that's a person go forward towards the conclusion of our presentation. We just want to highlight that the debt that is being owed is a painful debt for us, and we're not able to cover it as Fencap because we are scheduled 3B, so we don't have any grant funding that comes our way. MDDA is looking at solutions to this, and we are in conversation. And we do encourage community broadcasters to do their best to really be self-sufficient in terms of covering their costs for broadcasting. We are participating in all the outreach programs that the MDDA is doing for towards funding of community-based video broadcasters. On that note, Jefferson, I will pause my presentation and thank you very much for the time. My colleagues will join me and take questions later on. Thank you, Jefferson.
Thank you,
thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I hope you can hear me.
Yes, yes, I can hear you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson Manehi. Greetings to all honorable members. Greetings to the Deputy Minister in the Presidency, Honorable Siweya. Ours will be a very brief presentation. I'm Gavit Mdimwen, the chairperson of ICASA, and with me is a few members of council who are able to join us online. The chief executive officer of ICASA is on with us, as well as members of our senior management. Our presentation will be very brief, and we just aim to give an update on the processes that the authority is involved in. I think our colleagues from the side of the MDDA, GCIS, as well as NDEC have touched on the collaborative spirit with which we work in ensuring that they are broadcasting support and services to our communities. Now, the outline of our presentation is as follows. There will be innovation mission. Of course, we all, I believe, understand why ICASA exists. The guiding principles will be looking at the regulatory framework, the current new licensing framework, as well as the issues around sustainability from a licensing perspective, as well as sustainability from a compliance perspective. Now, indeed, I think we know, I will not dwell much on the slide. The ICASA, you know, established pursuant to Section 192 of the Constitution, and our Chapter 9 status is actually derived from this particular perspective of broadcasting as articulated in the Constitution of the Republic. Next. So the guiding principles are around the national objectives with regard to preservation and protection of cultural heritage, promotion and redress of identities, and languages and cultures previously discriminated against. There is the question around, regulations being crafted on issues of development of cultural identity, industries, expansion of diversity, as well as freedom of expression and access to information and linguistics rights. Now, the other part is around regulations seeking to strike a balance between the viability of broadcasters, the viability, the part that CENTEC touched on in the previous presentation, the public interest, which is our underpinning mandate, the promotion of the independent producers and artists. And I think central to all of this is also the question of the plurality of views. Now, the regulatory framework, there's a number of guiding regulations in this regard. I won't go through all of them, but I think we all know the standard terms and conditions, the licensing process and procedures regs of 2010, the radio frequency spectrum regs of 2015, you know, the South African music content regs and so forth. Next. Now, we will then just take you through, you know, the distribution of community radio stations from a geographic perspective. And I think it's important to note that all, you know, all communities have a voice, the scope for growth of the sector, and having all these regulatory interventions and licensing being a source of local content. Next. Now this map just illustrates, honorable members, our geographic spread and the number of community broadcasters we have across the country. I think that just the number of a numeric illustration of where we are at the moment. And then, as I've indicated, we work with MDDA and tech from a signal distribution point of view in this regard. Now, when we look at the licensing framework, we license in terms of Section 17 of the ECA. The licenses are valid for a period of 5 years and are renewable. Now, we do have another regime of special event licenses, and these are valid for 45 days, but are non-renewable. The authority will then issue invitations to apply about twice a year, and applications for the amendment and transfer of the community broadcasting licenses are done on an ad hoc basis. Applications for renewal are done also on an ad hoc basis, but 6 months prior to the expiry of the license. Now, this is where the bulk of our challenges, you know, resides, because we have a situation where community broadcasters, they don't approach the authority in the stipulated 6 months prior to the expiry. They wait for the license to expire, and then pretty much, you know, they cry foul when the particular licenses are led to die. And this is a very critical point, and I think tied onto the point I'm making, the fact that they don't expire at the same time. So that is what makes it important for the particular licensee to then approach the authority, because historically, unlike the process that is currently underway, they were not licensed at the same time. Now, there are requirements, you know, for the provision of broadcasting services, and those would be your radio frequency spectrum license, having a broadcasting service license in place, and having an electronic communications network service license. This is in case of self-provisioning of signal. Now, we have a new licensing framework which is currently underway, and with this, you know, we issued the invitations to apply for applicants to submit a pre-registration notice and a list of available frequencies in each district and local municipality were identified and published. The closing date was the 30th of June this particular year. Now, applicants must have been registered as a non-profit entity for 2 years prior to the lodgement of application. Here, we are frankly dealing with the issue of fly-by-night, where, you know, an applicant claims to be applying on behalf of a community, but the non-profit entity had just been registered a few months prior, or even a few weeks. There is no community ownership, and this then leads to instances of previous hijackings of community broadcasting service licenses. So we want to deal with this, at least a track record of about 2 years of prior existence. Now, there's also an issue around, you know, where we decide on the pre-registration within 90 days of closing of the submission. And then if applicants meet the requirements for the granting of a license, such a decision will be communicated only in writing. And then, depending on how the process unfolds, the authority may then hold, public hearings. And I think it's important to note that in this particular pre-registration, which closed on the 30th of June 2020, we received in excess of 130 applications. So this is quite a good turnout of applications that we received. The next one. Now, the issue of the sustainability of community broadcasting sector from a licensing perspective. Now, in reviewing the applications, the authority considers the following, you know, to promote sustainability in the community broadcasting sector is a question of ownership by community members. We've had a serious issue, as I've highlighted earlier on, where community members, you know, did not have a full grip on the functioning and ownership of the community broadcasting station. And this will be achieved having a board of directors as the custodian of the license. There is the question of proper funding details for the proposed service, including a realistic projected capital and operating expenditures, a viable business plan. There's another question of the description of proposed community and its needs, and how the registrant will serve the community's interest and fulfill identified needs. Because communities, as we would all appreciate, they don't have the same needs, you know, based on either, you know, rural or urban settings. Now, there's another question around the provision of estimated listenership and proof of support for the proposed service. This can be in the form of letters or signatures from community members. Then there's around another issue around the provision of detailed proposed programming schedule, which indicates how community members will be encouraged to participate. So here we are dealing with a question of community members owning that particular station, including the programming. Let's have locals participating in the programming and the running of the affairs of the station. Next slide. So there's the question of sustainability, but this one is from a compliance perspective. Now, as I've indicated, in the past we've had nothing short of a horrible, honorable members, you know, in terms of referrals to the tribunal, which is our complaints and compliance committee. So we are trying now to approach a more proactive approach by ensuring compliance with regulatory requirements, and this we do through regular workshops with our licensees and the board. We have the authority, you know, attending annual general meetings to ensure communities' participation. And some of these AGMs, I must highlight this to honorable members, that we've had very unfortunate incidents in the past where even members of the authority had to be escorted by police, you know, being attacked by trying to work and force compliance. They were attacked in some instances, you know, where the authority was then positioned, for lack of a better word, as the enemy. By virtue of wanting to ensure that the stations run properly, you would have certain, you know, rogue elements within communities, for lack of a better word, mobilizing certain sections of the community around, you know, attacking the authority. And then we also need to ensure implementation of good corporate governance principles. I think this one is what will really safeguard the sustainability. Now, in terms of collaboration with relevant stakeholders, as I've said, MDTA, GCIS, CENTEC, I think we cannot overemphasize the importance of collaboration, and then to continuously assist with corporate governance in line with the constitutions of those particular community licenses. And we need to ensure that there is no political, you know, there are no political office bearers as part of the stations. Honorable members, the issue of community radio stations and or TV and political interference is also a pain point. You find situations, especially in periods leading to local government elections, you find instances where, you know, community licensees become a bedrock of political contestations. Now, this is something that the authority really tries to confront and to ensure that it does not happen. Then lastly, you know, we have to refer. In instances of non-compliance, we have referrals going to the tribunals. And by the way, these referrals actually come from community members themselves. I mean, in the past, we've had community members write directly to the CCC and say, we have a community station in our community, in our area. We have not had any annual general meetings or an AGM was held under a tree somewhere. It was not representative of the aspirations of our community, and we would like the tribunal, the CCC, to adjudicate in this regard. In some instances, we've had a last resort where we had to, you know, to withdraw, you know, licenses, but that's really a last resort. I mean, it would happen in an instance where the particular broadcaster appeared more than three or four times. Remedies were proposed by the authority, but they were not adhered to. In such instances, I think we then have to do what is equally in the public interest and safeguard the you know, the license and the interests of the community. So I think that takes care of the authority's presentation, Honorable Chair Maneli, and we will then take questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair of the Board of the Council in ICASA. We now, Honorable Members, at a point where we need to engage. I have since been alerted that by 11 the DG from TCIS may have to disengage here and attend to the other meeting. However, there would still be people from the department to respond to questions if we are done by that time with regard to the department. Honorable members, I would now give an opportunity for members to engage with the presentation. I note hand now so that the members could engage. Just want to be sure, maybe Tim Binkosi, you'll also assist me on the side. I see Honorable Faku. Honorable Van Damme is welcome back. Honorable Mackenzie. Am I missing a hand here?
No, Chair, you're not missing a hand. I see Honorable Mulala, Chair.
Okay, that's after Honorable Mackenzie. That's Honorable Mulala, Honorable Kubeka. In that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to yourself, greetings to Deputy Minister, greetings to all honorable members and all entities that are present. Chair, let me just apologize for the problem of network, so my camera would not be on. Chair, let us appreciate all the presentations that we have received today. First, let me go to GCIS. I think, Chair, let us appreciate the good work that has been done by GCIS. I think that I think South Africans know exactly what is happening in our country. If you would open community radios and so forth, you would find them there. So I think let us appreciate the aim of the good work that you have been doing at GCIS. Appreciate teaching for people to understand what our government is really doing. But also let me appreciate the good work that has been done, especially on community radio stations, because I even do a chunk of their budget has been allocated to radio stations. That is where they focus. But also to raise and appreciate the good work that has been done as presented in Limpopo about the GBV education. I think that is very important. As we know that as a country, we are faced with a lot of gender-based violence against women and children. Let us appreciate that. But I just want to say that we want to see that in all provinces, especially in provinces where we have serious gender-based violence cases. I see that they are working with that, and I think that is important. Let us also appreciate the partnership they have with social development, and I think also justice currently. This is what we want. We want synergy among government departments. But here, where I have a problem with is on the youth spend on mainstream media, which is mainly Afrikaans and English, which is mostly consumed by the elite. This is not available for their target audience, which has access to limited information, especially people that stay in rural areas. I always make an example from where I come from, like WCDC, Glunda, Bangulu. People have little access to this print media. So I think GCIS must make sure that at least they improve, because even through community radio, the small commercial media, it's only the 20%, while majority of our people don't have access to them. I think this needs to change. We need to have this mainstream media, print media, in all languages, so that our people can really understand what our government is doing. Chef, on MDPA, I think it's important, Chair, again here with MDPA, that when it comes to MDPA, one thing is we need to understand that when we have debt, we must pay it. So they must stay centered, and I will always be consistent when it comes to this. I think also the Minister of Finance, when he was talking last week or the past 2 weeks to us, to say that whenever entities are not performing well, the state must take the responsibility and pay itself. So we want to urge them to make sure that they pay the debt. They also to MDPA, they must pay the debt, but also there must be negotiations, it must go on, but let us say what we owe. But Chair, I want to just go into the digital strategy MDPA have, especially when it comes to multi-choice. I think that the SABC must be considered in this. We must not be, I don't want to use this word, captured. But we must say that the FGDA has the same synergy between itself and the SABC. The availability of all community radio stations on SABC platform for free added compiling content to promote the CCT takeover. I think this is what we've been saying as a committee. We want to see that. I think we must have a full, I think we must not fall in the era of the previous leadership. We must make sure that the SABC is accommodated in this when it comes to MDPA. And then come to ICASA. Let us appreciate the good work ICASA has been doing. But I think, Chair, one thing that we need to note with ICASA, the regulator needs to review its licensing process while it's enabling and promoting media diversity. It must also have regard to license sustainability and viable licenses, because you will find out like in Tanzania there's 20 radio stations. But let us use the district model. One district municipality, one community radio station, unless the district is big. Because if we're going to have competition among the radio station, that is why I also think that the audiovisual policy must be reviewed, because there it does not allow ICASA to exercise, because it says that if 90 days has passed and ICASA has not approved the licenses, so it gives limited rights to ICASA, and I think that we're moving forward, Chair, has to make sure that we review that. And I also think that ICASA must strengthen its monitoring capacity in order to ensure that these platforms for community radios are always available. So that also there's not, because sometimes you will hear there's political interference, so that we safeguard from these issues. I just wanted to raise those points down, Chair. I'll come back again. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, and it's good to be back, and thank you very much for all the well wishes I got from the committee. So I'm glad that we have this cluster of entities together, because I see that there is a lot of space for collaboration, particularly going forward. I think the pandemic has sort of forced us to change really quickly, to develop our system so that we can meet the challenges that it brought. So just firstly, some good words. GCIS, I said this before and I'll say it again, because we must praise God where we see it. I think you've done fantastic work in getting the message about COVID out there. I think if the message, and I'm assuming you also used community media to get that message out there, because if you were not able to do that properly, we would be in a much worse space than we are now. And I think because of your work, we have been able to manage the spread far better than people in other countries, in first world countries, because you were able to mobilize government communication to get that message across. So congratulations on that. So now going forward, what a lot of the reading that I'm doing is that what the pandemic has done has forced a lot of business and government to go online. So this is something that would require collaboration between the CASA, the MDDA, Centec, and perhaps other entities for government services to become a bit more digital. This is not to say it must be completely digital, as Honorable Faku correctly points out, that in rural areas, sometimes people don't necessarily have network, even though we've got really high levels of network access in South Africa, but there's still those areas where it is not good enough. For example, one should be able to apply for a government document online without having to go to a particular office, apply for grants online. That's the way a lot of countries are going, and particularly for us as the digital technologies and communications PC, I think we have a very important role to play here. For GCIS and MDDA, obviously in collaboration with the ISC, I think it's very, very important to begin getting voter education out there, obviously in a very independent manner. I think last year, for example, we had a lot of young people that didn't register to vote. So you need to devise campaigns, because we've seen now during COVID that you actually can have an impact. Devise strategies to make sure that they appeal to young people, because the way that you've done it now has shown that you're actually able to change behaviors, because fighting COVID had to do it with a lot of behavioral change about people washing their hands, masks and so forth. So I think that will be very important and something you should start planning on now, because I don't think it necessarily requires an election being called, that it's an ongoing process about not only voter education, but teaching people how to get access to government services and putting those services online. And another important thing for me, for GCIS in particular, so as we know, fake news has been identified as the number one threat to democracies around the world. Obviously, it is worse during elections, and we would not want you to see you focusing on one particular kind of political party to debunk fake news. But in instances, for example, there's been a lot of xenophobic sentiment on social media. And as we know, with our recent past, that often then results in attacks on foreign nationals. So I think it's an important issue for you to focus on. I know you worked on debunking a lot of the fake news that was sent out about COVID. So I think it is important in order to protect our democracy that when you see such narratives spreading about our country, that you correct them, that you set them straight. Because it has a, even just beyond the possible consequences of violence, it has consequences on how we are perceived by other countries that come here and set up business and grow jobs. So I'd like you to please focus on that. And it's not something you need to do on your own. I know you've worked with Media Matters, but there are other organizations that specifically focus on dealing with identifying, for example, an individual who is spreading fake news, detrimental fake news. So please look into that. I think it is very important, and I think it will help with the efforts as we go into the election. I don't think there's a single political party here that will say, you know, we will just let fake news go on, and it's only an issue that political parties focus on because it affects us all equally, because it changes the way of political discourse. So that's another project I would like to see next time you present, you give us a comprehensive plan about, you know, this is what we're going to tackle. This is an organization we've spoken to that does digital forensic investigative skills, because I think as we move towards a digital economy, that's what we need to be focusing on. And then ICASA and MDDA. ICASA mentioned a very important topic about political interference in community media. And I know that is something we saw in the last parliament when we did oversight visits to a lot of community media. There seemed to be a slant against a particular political party. And I know for the deluge of complaints that ICASA often has to deal with, mainly with kind of the big political parties, I think maybe a mechanism needs to be set up, because it's not always the political parties themselves, as you could point out, that report these instances. It's also community members that do so. So I think there is some work to be done there, and perhaps a round table with all political parties about political interference in particularly ahead of elections and what needs to be done, because we all need to kind of work together about that. MDDA, you fund a lot of digital print and online radio, I think you said. Could you just give us the names of those digital media that you support, because I don't know if this is the first time you've mentioned it, and I may have missed it in the past, but could you just give an indication of the names of those that you provide funding to, because it's been traditionally kind of traditional media, newspapers and radio stations. I think that is it for now, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. Good morning, Deputy Minister, colleagues, and colleagues from the Department, the entities, all protocol observed. Thank you very much for being there. Let me practice what I've learned from Honourable Kruberger. I would like to thank the presenters very much for the presentations this morning. They were excellent, and they were. So thank you for the presentation. I'd like to thank you for that. My colleague, Honourable Van Damme, covered largely what I wanted to say around fake news. You know, anyone who's watched the American elections over the last couple of months makes us realize that our media generally, I think, in our community media, are streets ahead of anything that's provided by the any media entity in the United States. And I can say that without fear of contradiction, because the bias and the credibility of most mainstream media organizations in the United States is, in my opinion, completely suspect because of the way they conducted themselves around fake news and over this election. I'm very proud of our country and our media industry for not stooping down to those levels. And so to build on what my colleague was saying, what steps are both the department and the MDDA and the Council for that matter taking to educate and inform the people that are producing the content for our news platforms on fake news, what constitutes fake news, and the very real danger posed to democracies and free societies by the dissemination of fake news. And so I would support everything my colleague said on that and ask if we can pay extra special focus before it could become a real problem in our country. Then that I think that was largely a comment. In terms of digitization, you know, I get the impression as we go through the presentation that it's something we're working on and it's something we're looking at. I bought a car in 2016 that has an application app that can hook up with my phone, and then I can stream any station from almost anywhere in the world. Anywhere in the world, with no cast involvement or anything. Anywhere in the world, I can stream a station. So that's where the rest of the world is in terms of digitizing their offering. If we don't act on this now and move with speed when it comes to offering a digital product from our community stations, we are going to get left behind and we will never catch up. So again, just to emphasize the point, I think we need to move with dramatic speed along those lines. Then my last point, which is probably the most important, let me just refer to a slide briefly. Ms. Pochi, thank you for your presentation. I noticed very quickly as you were moving through the slides that there was a reference to historically diminished groups. We have an amazing lexicon in this country, but I've never heard of historically diminished groups. I've heard of disadvantaged groups, and so maybe it was a slip. If it was, perhaps you could just clarify that for me. This is my last term. There seems to be, in the last couple of presentations we've had, entities like the SABC, like community broadcasters, coming in and saying, you know, actually, the problem we're having being sustainable is that we can't pay CENTIC, that CENTIC is too expensive, that it's what CENTIC is doing that's stopping us from being successful. I'm not sure that that's... You know, it's a general trend that we're seeing, and I'm not sure that that's particularly fair on CENTIC, who has run a magnificent organization for as long as they've been in business. And I think we need to be careful of that. What I would like to ask CENTIC, then, just on that basis, in terms of the fees that you're charging, I might have asked this question before, and if I have, I apologize. The model that you're using for your pricing, can anyone in this country accuse CENTIC of price gouging or being far too expensive or not delivering value for money in the service that you provide? Thank you very much, Chairman.
Honourable McKenzie, Honourable Lala.
Thanks, Chairperson. Greetings to the Deputy Minister, my colleagues in the committee and all the MDCs, and I must thank them for the good presentation. I think, Chairperson, on average, MDCs that are here today, most of them are doing on average very well. but I liked what the Deputy Minister said in the introduction, that we need a meaningful engagement so that we can assess and ensure that there's accountability, despite the fact that there's good progress, because we should avoid complacency as well, because you are doing good, therefore we are not asking any questions. But for me, there's two main issues that attracted my attention in terms of the presentation. The first one is it's around sustainability of the community media, because at the center of all these issues that are raised, it's whether are they sustainable thus far. Are we making an impact in terms of sustaining them? And I don't hear all the presentation speaking to this key area. In the last presentations, we have heard how there are challenges and so on and so on, but we are not reaching a point where we are discussing what is the best way of getting this community media to be functional. And maybe the second issue would be slightly uncovered by Honorable McKenzie on the issue of the signal distribution, because I think we must not gradually gravitate into an area where the signal distribution is becoming an excuse for poor governance in terms of this community radio station. It has happened with SABC, but from where I'm sitting, I think we are gradually wanting to weaken the ability that Santec has in terms of this issue of the cost. Maybe we need to relook into this issue of signal distribution, because I mean, in terms of what ICASA has presented, it shows that many community media are not compliant. And at some point, the issue of governance also appears. Now, why don't we, as the collaborative entities, make submissions on how best we can help sustain this community media? More than paying the debt, I can see sometimes saying the community media is owing them about 70 million. Fine, MTDA is working on that and see how best they can meet it. But for me, the key challenge is how do we sustain this media, community media? The other area that I wanted to raise was on the impact that they had, this community media, both on how they're holding government development programs accountable, on how they respond to the political trends that are happening all over the world. Because in recent years, for instance, there's been a rise in right-wing politics globally. Obviously, South Africa is also not immune from that. And how do we show that our media, particularly community media, does not get captured with this concept of political interference, which might ultimately develop into some ideology, so that our media becomes neutral. I agree with Honorable McKenzie that from what we've seen in the United States, the issue of media neutrality is now in question. With a big superpower like the United States, where you can see which media supports which candidate. And we don't want to see that here in South Africa. We want to see an objective media that presents fair views across the board. Now, if we are not sustaining this community media institution, the likelihood that they will be captured is quite very high. So I want us to engage particularly on how best we can sustain. I've had, I don't know, my view is that MTDA, Santec, with your expertise, so far you've been doing well. What is your contribution? How best can we help this community media, because it's very, very central to our democracy. If we are not working on this project, my fear is that we still have the same problems that the United States is having now. Maybe the last point, Chair. Why are we not seeing the early signs of weaknesses in terms of this community media? Maybe from both MDA and Centec. We need to know before the problem is bigger. Now, you're being owed 70 million. How many years is it going to take for them to pay you the 70 million? In the same breath, these community media are still operational. They're still increasing their debt. Now, we need a way of this collaboration helping us to identify problems before they become huge. Secondly, to help us sustain these institutions, because they are very, very much important for our democracy. I hope I summarized all my views. I did not want to go entity by entity. I thought that these are, for me, are the key discussion. Maybe for what, just one question to ask you, Gizon. In terms of your presentation, I say this community media is not sustainable, particularly in terms of signal distribution, or because when you were presenting up here, you were a bit diplomatic, but I want you to be frank with us that this issue of community media for me is very close to my heart. Thanks, Chair. Maybe that's how I summarize the discussion, maybe with the engagement on all entities. I'm not excluding anyone. Then to say how best we can make our contribution in ensuring that this community media is sustainable and is not biased to anyone. Thanks.
Honorable Mlala, we now go to Honorable Kubeka.
Thanks, Chair. Thank you very much. Firstly, let me apologize for the side of the camera, because the network is not okay on this side, Chair. Let me greet the Deputy Minister, all honorable members that are present today, the delegation from different entities that they are here today. Chair, firstly, I would appreciate, because I can see on the side of these entities as they are trying to collaborate, all of them, I appreciate that, Chair. But let me start on the side of the GCIS. I also appreciate and acknowledge their presentation. I would like just to ask to DG to say, indeed, you are trying very hard to work with this, also the department of the government. Can you also just try to explain, are you managing to persuade maybe all of those departments in order that they can come on this side, on the side of advertising, if they want to advertise, seeing that on the side of the GCIS you are there, and also the side of MDDA, in order that they must also give the support, because you are saving one key important thing to all over the country, let me say that. Is it possible to persuade these other departments, because now you've managed to gain other departments, but interesting, they are not all, but I'm happy because now I can understand even those key ones that even the poor of the poorest are there. You tried to manage just like this one of Baza, the one of justice. You are pushing very hard at DG. Also, DG, we need to have a strategy of encouraging the private sector around the areas that maybe they are there, just like the checkers, the pick and pay, also just to try to use these community radio stations in order that also it can be a way of trying to improve on the side of the revenue of the MGPA. But now I would like to understand, because it shows that the National Treasury also